What is up, everybody? Raymond Summerlin here. This is the Sharp Angles Podcast, a very special edition of the Sharp Angles Podcast, not because we're going to learn anything about our morals and ethics, but because we're going to talk about something new we have, a new idea, an idea I haven't actually seen before, and that is from Todd Burrows, his best ball confidence rankings. We're going to talk about those, what they are, how to use them, maybe a few players, all that stuff. But before we do that, I do want to introduce the one, the only, Todd Burrows. How you doing?
I am well. My computer decided to give me trouble like right up until about a minute before the show. But as they say, all's well that ends well. I'm real excited to talk about this. I think you're right. I don't think that we've seen anything like these rankings before. And I'm really anxious to go over it with you and to have people hopefully ask some questions. And we can talk about everything.
Yeah, and just to kind of like pull the curtain back a little bit, we were talking about, you know, best ball rankings and if that's something we wanted to do this year in one of our, you know, one of our big meetings. And you came up with this idea and you put threw out this idea. And I think all of us, everybody that was in there, myself, Rich Rebar, Warren Sharp, we were like, yeah, that's a really good idea. And we've been able to execute it. And it's now up on the website. If you go to sharpfootballanalysis.com, you can find the best ball confidence rankings. I'd highly recommend going and checking those out. They are going to be part of our Sharp Football Draft Kit. So that's going to be how you access them in the future. Right now, they're free. We wanted to give everybody a chance to look at them, how to use them. There's an article up from Todd, kind of looking at all those things that we're going to talk about as well on the podcast today. And I just think they came out really good. And I think that the theory behind these is very sound. And that's really where I want to start here with the theory behind them is actually – I take that back. Where we need to start is, what are they? And they are actually up on the screen right now, Todd, as we scroll through them. So you want to talk a little bit here about the basic idea of what these rankings are, and then we can get into why they're a little bit better.
Yeah, so I've, you know, in the old days, as I mentioned in the article, everyone had these magazines. At the back of every magazine was the rankings. You'd bring them with you. They'd be 6 weeks old. And, you know, there was always three or four guys in the draft who used them like gospel. Well, yep. Fantasy rankings really haven't changed that much. And best ball is a completely different animal anyway. So the concept behind the best ball rankings and how to use them is I wanted to give some subtlety to the rankings. And so basically what you're looking at is current ADP as of, I think, a day ago that we pulled from Underdog. And basically when you're on the clock and you're drafting a best ball team, what you're not looking necessarily to draft the next guy up. You're looking to either complete a strategy or find a guy you like. So we wanted to come up with some rankings that would give you more than just player A is after player B. I like player B after player C. And the reason for that is that, you know, you don't get any texture. So basically what you're looking at right now is the cautions. Cautions are guys that I'm not really drafting at ADP. They are guys who, if they slip around maybe two, depending on where in the draft, I would draft. So we have blue. We've got green, blue, yellow, and red. Green means, target.
Actually, before we go through all these, we definitely need to go through all these.
Okay.
No, before we go through all these, I want to go back to your point because I think it's really good, and I want to hit on why I love this idea so much. So you mentioned that what we have up here are they're sorted by ADP. They're sorted by Underdog ADP. And the reason that I like this kind of idea and what we're doing here is because so many people are drafting now based off ADP. It is wisdom of the crowds. ADP tends to be very good. It tends to be better than even consensus rankings when you look back at the season. And so people do kind of stick to ADP. And as you go through Underdog drafts, people will be drafted a little bit ahead of, a little bit behind, but you don't generally see these huge reaches, at least in the drafts that I'm doing. And so ADP is very important now as we draft, especially if you're drafting a ton of teams in best ball and you don't want to, you know, you want to make sure you're getting everybody at the best possible price. What makes these rankings interesting to me is that what we're doing is not saying, I like player A, I like player B, but I like player C, at least what Todd's doing. I like player A, player B, player C, in kind of that order. He's saying where this player normally goes in a draft, do I want to draft this player here? And for most players, the answer is because ADP is pretty good. Sure. And so you'll look through the rankings and most of them will be ranked neutral or they'll have no color because most of them are like, yeah, it's fine. If you like that player, it's fine. But also what we're able to do is identify players that are values, players that are maybe being drafted below where they should be, players that are at hyper values, those we call those targets, players that are going way lower than they should. You can move them up, you know, you can take them well ahead of where you might need to. And then the opposite side of both of those things, players that are cautions, players that are players you should avoid at their current price. And I think that at their current price is such an important part of this because that's what separates an actionable thing that you can use from just a list of rankings, right? Because the list of rankings is good. I'm interested in what Rich Rebar, who he likes better, right? But that list of rankings doesn't take into account price. It doesn't take into account where you're going to have to draft these players. Whereas I think these do, and that's why I'm really like these a lot. And I'm happy that this is kind of the way they turned out. And that's as soon as you said the idea.
I just want to say that
I would have thought was good.
I would have felt like a douchebag doing regular rankings. I just would have. I would have felt like I was taking people's money and not helping them. Right. And I come from the school of we're in this to try and help people, to educate them, and to make them better players, to teach them to fish. And so what, you know, then I put some thought into it. And the thought was, well, when I'm on the clock, what am I thinking, right? It, you know, if I'm on the clock and Kyle Pitts is the top guy, and he's also a blue, well, I'm doing a dance and I'm probably taking him, you know, right away. You know, a green, I mean, if there's a green guy, you know, I might even take a green guy early. So the most important thing I want to say about this, though, is this teaches you how to build a portfolio and to build toward exposure. So it isn't just rankings, but it's a way to build your portfolio. If you're doing, like I am, probably 500 drafts this year, it's how to give you a, you know, and if you're newer to this and maybe you're going to do 50, I want to give you a chance to understand how I build a portfolio. And these colors and the article that goes with it helps you to understand how to build a portfolio, not just to give you picks.
Yeah, and I think that that's another important part about it, and you mentioned it in the article that goes along with this, is that targets, the players that are highlighted in green, don't generally stay targets for long because ADP is good and people react to things that have changed and people notice market inefficiencies. And so players that are targets will very often go up in cost. You identified one from earlier in draft season, Bijan Robinson, who has now gone up in cost and has moved from kind of that target range to just a neutral range, still a fine pick, but not somebody we're going out of the way to draft. And it's because these are going to move, but if you can build up a large exposure to that player while they're a target, while they're in green, then, you know, you're getting the best possible value for them as their ADP moves up. You're getting closing line value on what their ADP is going to end up being. And if you can identify these players, which is what Todd is doing and Todd's good at doing, then you can really build a nice portfolio. As a reminder, these are all up on sharpfootballanalysis.com. If you're watching this live with us right now, you can see it on the site, but if you're not, go to Sharp Football Analysis. The rankings are completely free for this update. We'll be updating them as we go through the offseason and, you know, even more and more as we get closer to the season. The next update is going to actually be part of our Sharp Football Draft Kit. We have a ton of stuff in the Sharp Football Draft Kit. These rankings, Rich Rebar's rankings, Rich Rebar's rookie rankings, his write-ups for every single Dynasty rookie. In fact, he's going to start doing a podcast series on Thursday with our very own Ryan McChrystal about all of the rookies. all of that stuff, free agency, all of our free agency takes of the biggest movers, Derrick Henry, Saquon Barkley, all of that in our draft kit. Make sure you go and check that out at Sharp Football Analysis. I do want to go real quick, and we kind of got into it a little bit, what these rankings actually mean, and just kind of go real quick one through one, one by one. When the targets, that to me, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I view that as somebody that if I reach on this guy, that's fine because I'm getting him at a pretty good value here already.
Yeah. So basically a target is someone that, and there's going to be fewer green and reds than there will blue and yellows because ADP does tend to be pretty efficient. And there's going to be, right now, there's about 60% neutral, right? So most players, again, think of it this way. This isn't my rankings. This is Underdog's actual ADP. So if you're on the board and you have four or five guys that are neutral when you're up, it means that you really can pick any one of them and not hurt yourself, right? If there is one of them that's a blue and there's no other blues, then most of the time, not every time, but most of the time, I'm going to take that blue. The green is a guy that I'm willing to take a round early, maybe two, or should I say a tier earlier than where they're going. And I'll do that to build a portfolio. So another guy that I used in the article was Marshawn Lloyd, who was probably my favorite running back tape other than Jonathan Brooks, who was injured, right? So of the healthy players, I had Marshawn Lloyd as my second or third running back, and he was going like the 10th to 15th rookie running back in early best ball. So I would take him in some drafts at ADP, some drafts around early, some too early. And that is dependent on the other very important thing is your positional variables on that team. So when would I take, if I already had four or five running backs, I wouldn't take Marshawn Lloyd two rounds early. But if I was doing a zero running back build and I was, and he was the best running back on my board two rounds earlier, I would just take him, right? Because I knew there were other guys that I also liked who would come back to me. And so that allows you to build up to what I call my maximum exposure that I want on a player. Yellow is a guy that I don't like as much. So typically I'll wait for them to drop around or a tier. And I might not even like them at that drop, but I've been wrong way too many times, Ray. I am pretty good at this, but I've missed out plenty on good players, situations, blind spots, whatever. So I've gotten in the habit of my yellow guys, I will, if they drop around or if I'm on the clock when they're there and they complete a stack, I will take them in yellow with the goal of building up 3 to 5% ownership on those players.
Typically, can I step in real quick on that? Yeah. Because I think that's such a good point about, and this comes back to your idea of how are we building portfolios, right? And how are we building right. our exposure if we're drafting, you know, this many teams? I won't draft nearly as many teams as you do, but if we're drafting, you know, if you're drafting 50 teams, how do I build this exposure? And I think that that's an important point of recognizing that you're going to be wrong. We're just all going to be wrong. That's the way that this works. You're not going to be right about every single player. If you happen to be right about every single player in a given year, congratulations, you're going to win $4 million. And I hope that you spend it well. But the reality is that we're going to be wrong about players. We're going to be wrong. We're going to undervalue players. We're going to overvalue players. And so if you're drafting a lot of teams, you want to build that in. And so these yellow players, maybe I don't like them so much. Maybe I don't like these caution players. But if they fall around, I mean, that's value on ADP. And that kind of makes up for me not being particularly excited about drafting them. Or like you said, if they complete a stack, that makes up for that. So yeah, I think that's a really important point of this, portfolio building.
Yeah. You know, I use the example of Bijan at 9. So he was green to me at 9. I was taking him at 9. I got him at 10. I think I got him at 11 once. I even took him at 3 and 4 and 6. I really was building up my Bijan ownership. And, you know, then all of a sudden he went up to like 7. And if we were doing rankings then, he would have been blue. But now at 5, he's neutral. So, you know, a guy like Puka Nacua, do I hate Puka Nacua? No. But with Kyren Williams and Jonathan Taylor behind him, two guys who I consider right now blue, it's really hard for me to take much Puka Nacua. Now, I will, but, it's kind of like texture, trying to give texture to the people who are drafting Nico Collins. You know, a lot of people might be, why are you down on Nico Collins? He's a stud. You'll notice if you go down a little further, you'll notice a little bit more. There's Tank Dell. He's also a caution. And if you go down a little further, you'll find CJ Stroud, also a caution. Well, you know, and there's different reasons for each one. Tank Dell's coming off a major injury. They say it's going well, but, you know, they've also been talking about adding another wide receiver to that room. If they add a first or second round wide receiver, those guys are going to be dropping a round or two. So you can look at this also from another way. And we kind of intimated at it. This is my attempt to guess where people's ADP are going to be in the future.
Yeah, and I think that's, again, another great point about this is you need to acquire these players, get exposure to these players when their value is lower, and maybe try to avoid it and see if they could fall. And the other thing about point I wanted to make, because I think the Bijan point's good for this, how much you're willing to deviate from ADP changes as you move through the draft, right? And that's why Bijan Robinson only moving up a few places is so important, because the places he's moving up is in the first round. And so those spots are more important than maybe a round later in the draft. And so I think that where you are in the draft is going to play a big role in that as well. And then the last thing, and I know you mentioned you want to talk about this, when we're looking at these kind of avoids, and if we're thinking about these buys, and you mentioned it a little bit with Lloyd, team construction and where you are in the draft and what you've done before then is going to play a large role, because it might just be that an avoid player is the best player left at a position that you need to target. And if that's the case, you know, that's where you are based on your roster construction. And so roster construction, you know, that's going to play a big role in this as well, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, a perfect example might be you're up in the 7th round and there's a blue guy, which is a good value, but nothing to, you know, to freak out about. And he's a wide receiver. Well, you already might have one quarterback and 4 wide receivers and no running backs. And then you look at the running backs that are there and you say, all right, I'm going to have more of this guy because he's blue, but do I really want to, you know, be so unbalanced with this team? And then knowing the board, you know, there's so much that you can't teach in just one article. There's so much texture to drafting best ball teams, but at least this is better than player A, then player B, then player C, then player D. And, oh, I've moved player D up from 12 to, you know, from 15 to 12, you know, and people will send out tweets. You know, there's so many more things. Like right now we're looking at Romeo Dubs as an avoid. Okay. Why? Well, if you go down further, you're going to see I have Dontavius Wicks as a buy. So, you know, I think that there's so many reasons for it, and that's why I'm hoping that people will engage me on Twitter about these and we can get into conversations, because I'm willing to change these rankings if someone can talk to me. You know, the whole purpose of this is to kind of iron sharpens iron, to make not just you better, but to make me better as well.
Actually, the other thing I want to say before I forget is
you will find more blue and greens later in drafts at this time of year, because I, you know, you talk about Ryan and Rich going to do rookies. You'll notice a lot of rookie values, and you'll notice some rookie cautions, like Keon Coleman. You know, I have him way down my, like, Keon Coleman and Troy Franklin. I have Troy Franklin well ahead of Keon Coleman as a player, especially year one, which is what best ball is. So if you also want to know my thoughts on the rookies, it's right in here, baby.
Yeah, it's all right there. And I think that we're going to talk about a rookie here in a second, but it is interesting to me as I kind of went through them. It seems like the rookies that get steamed early, and Marvin, we're about to talk about Marvin Harrison Jr., those ones you're more cautious of. But here at the end, it seems like, for the most part, you're willing to take some shots on a lot of these rookies. Did I kind of see it that way? Is that right?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, there's one rookie that I'm building a heavy portfolio of right now in the 20th round. I actually added him because he didn't show up.
He wasn't in the top 250 ADP, and Todd added him as Todd's pick.
You know, his name is Jacob Cowing, and I like to joke that there's not going to be a Tank Dell in this draft, but if there is a Tank Dell in this draft, it's going to be Jacob Cowing. Everything that I liked about Tank Dell last year, his tape, and I didn't even watch Tank Dell's tape till after they drafted him, and I saw the blurb on where CJ Stroud like pushed for Tank Dell. I'll talk about Xavier Leggett if you want. I want a boat. And you know, he's one of the more interesting guys in the draft. So but to finish up on Cowing gets in and out of his breaks incredibly fast, which is something I've found really seems to translate to the next level. Guys who can get open, get the ball. And Cowing was also very, very productive for 2 years in college. So I'm surprised he hasn't gotten more steam. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him get drafted a lot sooner than people think. As far as Xavier Leggett, he is the cautionary tale. In other words, historically, there's tape nerds and there's stat nerds, right? I tend to be a tape nerd who has a lot of respect for the stats. I consider those things. And one of the big things that has been proven by stats is that early breakout often translates to the NFL. Guys who break out late tend to bust way more than guys who break out early. Well, Xavier Leggett was awful, just absolutely awful for 3 years. And then, you know, I want a boat compared him to DK Metcalf. He showed similar skills as a senior. So I see certain things on tape that I believe can translate to the next level. But I'm more cautious on him than some other people because of the late breakout. So there is the rule. And whenever there's a rule, there is also going to be exceptions to the rule. And I find that the stat guys sometimes will cut off their nose to spite their face because they're right most of the time. But I think Leggett could be what they call an outlier.
Yeah, I think Rich put it. So Rich wrote the pre-draft rookie rankings, which are also in the Sharp Draft Kit, which you go check out. These rankings are going to be a part of that as well. And he wrote a part. I wanted to find it. I have it here. And he says, we have to be honest and question that if it were not for the added eligibility based on COVID, would Leggett have even been invited to the combine or on anyone's radar? And I think it's a fair question. I think it's a fair question that points out some of the perhaps inadequacies in how we do this whole process. But I think that the other kind of part of this is that we you know, we have to pay attention to breakout age because it's important. We have to pay attention to the fact that he was, what, 23 or something like that. I believe he's going to be one of the older receivers coming into the league. And so there's a lot going on with Legette. I'm not a rookie guy. I did find that very interesting.
He also caught a lot of screen passes, you know, and that's another kind of negative thing. I'm going to look forward to Matt Harmon's thought on him. Because a lot of times what I see on tape, Matt Harmon is able to quantify. And one guy we kind of disagree on is Rome Odunze. He likes him a lot. I don't have him as high as others. We also got another question from I Want a Boat. Do I like Spencer Rattler?
I also would like a boat, to be honest. I'm also interested in owning a boat. We're on the same page with that.
I'm as large as a boat.
I am as well. Yeah.
So I tend to only watch players who I think are a pre-draft, who are going to be important for best ball. I have not gotten a Spencer Rattler yet, so I don't have an opinion. I didn't watch Bo Nix.
What I would say, and I actually had a good conversation about Spencer Rattler with Eric Froton after the combine. And Spencer Rattler is such an interesting kind of profile because he was such a high profile recruit. It obviously didn't work out at Oklahoma. He goes to South Carolina and there are ups and there are downs. When he showed up at the combine, and this is kind of what got us talking about, hey, he didn't look to be in the best shape at the combine, which makes you worry. But from a talent perspective, and you go back to his ratings when he was coming out of high school, from a talent perspective, it's definitely there. And a team is definitely going to take a shot on him on day three. Like, I'd be surprised if that doesn't happen. And, you know, who knows, right? But we could, you know, is he going to be relevant this year in best ball? I mean, that would be shocking. But yeah, I mean, who knows? The talent is obviously there. But I do worry that he's going to be another one of these. Who's that Ole Miss quarterback? Kelly. That everybody tried to make a thing
for
a while.
Still in like one of the minor leagues or something. I look at it like this. I draft far less pre-draft than I do post-draft. I have something like less than 50 drafts in right now. Okay. If I'm going to do 500, you know, so I'll probably end up around 70 pre-draft. So I'm a lot less concerned about touching every base. I don't think Rattler is likely to end up in a position where he's going to play unless there's an injury in front of him. I'm willing to take that gamble pre-draft with those teams. I'm not going to take him as a third quarterback. I don't take Michael Penix, and I don't take
Penix.
Yes. And I don't take Stevie Nicks. I mean, Bo Nix. But
man, you're going deep. You know what's interesting about that? Some of your older references, they don't hit, but the kids have found Stevie Nicks on TikTok, and the kids have found rumors. And so that one might hit. They found it.
And if you ever saw the South Park episode where they made Stevie Nicks an old goat. Going and the guys are going, oh, she still has it. One of my favorite South Park episodes. So I feel like, so Rattler, Nix, Penix, not guys I'm drafting pre-draft. I would rather take those late shots on rookies who could win me a lot of money at the running back and wide receiver position. Because those guys, you know, I like Ray Davis a lot. Ray Davis, one of my favorite tapes. Another older guy that, you know, just kind of like last year, people were saying, well, Tajay Spears has no knee ligaments. I'm like, yeah, but how did he look as a senior? I mean, his tape was amazing. You know, Ray Davis is the guy that I like. And, you know, if these really talented guys end up cowing Legette, if they end up in the right spot, they're going to go 5-6 rounds earlier than where they're going now. So that's kind of how I like to play early best ball.
I also think one more thing on that, and I want to move on to talk about a few of these players. That's the importance between being able to differentiate between, are we talking about dynasty or are we talking about just single year leagues? Because, right. Yeah, if his knee is bad, if we have I always think about Jay Ajayi, who running back obviously loved, had a lot of success in the NFL, but he had his knee issues as well. And, you know, he was good for a few years there before, you know, before kind of falling out of the league. And so, yeah, we don't care in best ball about the long term. We care about right now. I do want to talk about a few of these players, you know, keeping on the rookie theme. One of the avoids, I believe actually your first avoid in the rankings, is Marvin Harrison Jr., currently going as a wide receiver 10 around pick 18 in underdog drafts. I wanted to start with this one because I don't necessarily agree with it. And I think it's an interesting conversation to have. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think your kind of reasoning here is you're spending a lot on a player where we don't know where he's going to end up. Is that kind of the idea?
I don't like drafting players at their ceiling when I don't even know what their team is. Say Marvin Harrison comes out and he does everything that you think he's going to do. At best, he is going to be, you know, where he is now, right? It's very, very, very unlikely that he comes in and is, you know, pays off a first round value. Well, I would rather take somebody who has a little bit more certainty. And to me, that's, you know, so, you know, on Twitter, the big argument is Malik Nabers or Marvin Harrison Jr. For me, I like Malik Nabers as much as I like Marvin Harrison Jr. So I'm going to take Malik Nabers, right? A round and a half later. You know, I don't have him as a buy or a value, a target or a value, but I do think that Nabers, you know, and Nabers has a better chance to end up on a good team. So if Marvin Harrison ends up, and again, this goes back to my, I'm not drafting all that much now. If Marvin Harrison goes pick 4 to Kyler Murray and Arizona, where do you think that's kind of the best case for him? Where do you see that doing to his ADP?
I mean, that to me, that is the best case scenario for him. They do not have any wide receiver. Well, that's not true. They have they have Wilson, but you know, their wide receiver situation is not great. Kyler Murray is there. I would love that for Marvin Harrison. You know, there
you
are people
think
that
it would
maybe
move send up. Do you think it would move his ADP up though?
I don't actually. And so I know why, but here's my bigger point. And this, I wanted to use this to kind of illuminate the difference between some of these. If you had him as a caution, I wouldn't have had any problem with that. But as an avoid, at that point, you're never going to end up with him on your roster, at least right now. And I don't think that he's at that point because I don't think there's any way he doesn't end up in a situation where they need him. Right. Let's say he ends up with the Chargers, which I don't think is going to happen based on everything we've seen from them and who Jim Harbaugh is and who Greg Roman is. But let's say he ends up with the Chargers. Then he's just got, you know, Quentin Johnston and Josh Palmer there. And obviously has Justin Herbert. They're going to be run heavy, but that's still a good situation. We mentioned Arizona is a good situation. The Giants, we still don't know about Darren Waller. He would be easily the number one there. Is the offense probably isn't great, but you know, he's still the easy number one. If someone's trading up to get Marvin Harrison, then that is generally an indication they really needed a wide receiver. And so there are bad outcomes. Like if he ended up at Chicago, if Chicago really wants to build on offense, that would be a bad outcome. Maybe they see Keenan Allen as a more of a one-year rental and they want to get somebody in there to, you know, for more of a future look, or maybe ends up with the Jets and kind of a similar thing with Mike Williams. And so there are bad outcomes, but I think that the most likely outcome, he's going to end up in a spot where he's the clear number one. And if we go over the history of wide receivers that are drafted this highly, they get opportunities in year one almost always, especially over the last 5 years. No wide receiver over the last 5 years has been drafted in the top 10 has got fewer than 100 targets. If you go back 10 years, the average is 95 targets as a rookie for people drafted in the top 10. If you take out the only two clear busts in there, which are John Ross and Kevin White, that total goes up to 110 targets per game as a rookie. And so, I mean, there's always the opportunity that Harrison busts. There's always the opportunity he doesn't get to a good spot. But I think most likely he is going to be the wide receiver one on his team wherever he goes and is going to get funneled targets. And I think that's probably going to work out for him. And so if you called him a caution, I'd be like, yeah, he probably priced a little high. But Avoid is like, I'm never going near that guy. And I think that there's many more pathways to it working out for him than not working out for him is kind of the way I'm viewing it.
Yeah, and I think that's very fair. I almost switched him to caution at last minute for all the reasons that you mentioned, but I haven't drafted him to this point. And fair enough. we were doing the article, so I left it as read. One of the key points that I make in the article is that you'll very rarely see a red in the first two rounds. So I left him there to kind of be an example of the one of the few situations where I would just full fade. I'm not doing that many drafts. If this was post, if this was post draft, I know we would know where he's going, but at worst, he'd be a caution, right?
Yeah.
Because he's so talented. But, and there's also only Devontae Adams in that area is blue. So it's not like, you know, if there were three or four blues, so this is what I'll say. If there were three or four blues in that area, I would say that the red would be justified. Because there's so many neutrals, and there's a couple other cautions in that area, I would agree with you. I just wanted to, you know, Nico's yellow, Rashee Rice is yellow, and look at all that neutral space, right? That points to him probably being a caution more than an avoid.
Well, but I think your point about it's right. You haven't drafted him. And so if you haven't drafted him, that's an avoid. And your point about price, and I think that that's a really good aspect of this. Will his price go up from here? No. Like, I can't imagine it does. I can't imagine what situation would lead to this price going up from where it is now because it's very high. And so I think that's a fair point about it as well. But
unless the Niners trade Ayuk to a team and get a first round pick and then draft Marvin Harrison, you know, that kind of thing. Unless something weird like that happens, yeah, he's not going up any higher, and very likely he'll go lower post-draft. He goes to New England. It's still possible New England takes him at three. He goes to New England. He's dropping a full round.
Yeah, absolutely he is. I didn't have them on my list because I can't imagine them not taking a quarterback, but you're right. That would be not a great situation at all. I did want to mention Devontae Adams. Devontae Adams is a target. He's highlighted there, green at wide receiver 11, one wide receiver spot behind Harrison. I assume that being behind Harrison plays some role in that, but I mean, also you probably are a little bit more interested in the quarterback situation as it stands now with potentially Gardner Minshew than you were, you know, at the end of last season with Aiden O'Connell.
Yeah. The biggest problem is if the coach just wants to run the ball all the time. But, I mean, in my heart, I see Devontae Adams in the same tier as Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase, and guys who are going much earlier. So I just feel that the discount on Devontae Adams is worth the risk that they don't figure out quarterback. You know, there's a lot of rumor about them trying to move up for Jaden Daniels. You know, and the other thing about Devontae Adams, remember, best ball spikes are so important in best ball. And Devontae Adams has been a human spike week for the last 5 years. You know, he can, you know, if you take Devontae Adams and you pair him with any of the top five guys and both of them hit a spike week at the same time, there's almost nobody who's going to catch you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think, so Adams was 18.9% of his targets last season were off target, which was the 10th highest rate among qualifying receivers. I don't think, so here are some outcomes for the Raiders quarterback situation. Gardner Minshew starts, which Gardner Minshew wasn't, you know, wasn't outstanding last year. He's 21st among 32 qualifying quarterbacks and off target rate. That's better than what we saw from the Raiders last year. O'Connell starts, which likely means he beats out Gardner Minshew, which likely means that he has improved, which would mean you maybe see some improved quarterback play. Or like you said, they find a way to acquire another quarterback, whether that is a rookie or someone else. And all of those outcomes would be good for Davante Adams, who, by the way, you know, Jacoby Myers was there and he still had Davante Adams still had a target on 30% of his routes last year. And so, and they haven't made any, you know, massive additions in that respect either. And so,
And Josh Jacobs is gone. That I know they like Zamir White, but there's a chance they pass a little bit more. I think we're saying the same thing on Devontae.
Yeah, I like Adams. I like where he's going. The worry about him is valid, but I definitely like where he's going. Let's talk about a caution here, a yellow with Dalton Kincaid. And he used Kincaid to kind of make a point about these cautions about the stacks. If you have Josh Allen, then Dalton Kincaid's not a caution at his current price. He's just kind of a neutral pick, right? Because we're talking about adding that value in other ways if we're a little bit worried about how they're priced in ADP.
Yeah. So first of all, with Dalton Kincaid, I way a much more prefer Trey McBride a little earlier, Mark Andrews, you know, Pitts a little later. The reason I'm not on Dalton Kincaid is I feel that I can get what I'm going to get out of him either better a little earlier or just as good a little later, right? So that's the kind of guy that is a caution, right? He's not a great value where he's going. There's a lot of so cautions to me often suggest that the market, the field, is assuming too much, either positive or negative. In this case, positive. They're assuming he's going to take the next step. Well, he did for a while when Dawson Knox wasn't there, when he was hurt. Well, guess who's there? Dawson Knox. Shakir, slot guy. Who is that, the guy that they
Curtis
signed?
Curtis
Samuel, slot guy, right? So Dalton Kincaid is going ahead of Kyle Pitts. And, you know, he's going to have a lot more trouble paying it off. So, but if I've got Josh Allen and I'm on the board and Kincaid is the top guy on the board, and Aaron Jones, Joe Mixon, Alvin Kamara, and Kyle Pitts are all there, I'll pass on the value in that draft to make the stack because the stack makes up the difference of what I gave up. So overall, I'm now neutral, and it gives me the opportunity to get Dalton Kincaid at ADP instead of waiting for him to drop, like I write about in my article. And that is, you know, again, you have to factor in all the factors of value, and stacking adds a value to a team. But sometimes people overvalue that stack. And this is a case where I'm willing to, you know, it gives me the opportunity to build some ownership on a guy in case I'm wrong about him.
I think your point about, you know, about Shakir and Curtis Samuel and Dawson Knox, I think that's a very good point. What I find interesting about the Kincaid just kind of profile in general is what we saw after Joe Brady took over is we saw him get used more down the field. I mean, early in the season, he was being used so much around the line of scrimmage. They were low upside targets. He was getting, he had 4.2 air yards per target before the offensive coordinator change. After that, he averaged 8.3 air yards per target. It was a massive shift that we saw. We saw him get used down the field, something that he is able to do. And replacing Gabe Davis with Curtis Samuel, now we'll see what they do in the draft. I have to assume they're going to be trying to add some wide receivers in the draft. There are lots of good wide receivers in the draft this year, from what I am told by people I trust about the draft. So
it's a very they could deep add wide somebody. Receiver draft.
Very deep. But as it stands right now, they have Curtis Samuel and Khalil Shakir, and neither of those players is really equipped to kind of take on what Gabe Davis was doing. And if Dalton Kincaid can be used downfield more and they're interested in using him there, there could be the opportunity there. And if I'm making an upside case for Dalton Kincaid, aside from just being attached to Josh Allen, right? But if I'm making an upside case for Dalton Kincaid, that's where I'm looking for him. And you know, we'll see what happens. But like you said, if I'm getting him either below where his ADP is his draft cost, or if I'm getting him attached to Josh Allen and kind of negating some of that value loss, what I perceive as value loss, I'm also insulating myself from that upside of being wrong about Dalton Kincaid.
Right.
Well, now I'm insulating myself from that upside.
Well, again, we're talking about assumptions, right?
Yeah.
ADP knows that they might add a wide receiver, but until they actually add the wide receiver, ADP doesn't reflect it. Okay. So a wide receiver I like more, the consensus that would fit the role of Gabe Davis is the Oregon guy, Troy Franklin. I think he's better than just a deep threat. But end of the first round, Troy Franklin to the Bills, I would guess that Dalton Kincaid drops around, right? Round and a half. Also, I feel the tight end is going way earlier than it has in the past. So in general, there's a lot of things that have pushed up Dalton Kincaid that could kind of slip back where I can get my ownership of him later. And that's the kind of guy that I put a caution on.
One more guy I wanted to identify here, and that's Breece Hall, which you have marked as a value. He's currently going as the RB3 is 6.4. I found it interesting that you had him as a value. To me, that suggests that you think it's possible he finishes as just like the overall RB1. Am I right in that assumption? You think that's within the realm of possibilities?
Yeah, absolutely. He's also could be a human spike week. Right.
Yeah.
But really, the reason I have him as a value is because I really feel running back falls off after him. Right.
Yeah.
I think he has a floor that Gibbs doesn't. So the next running back up is Gibbs. So I think can you pull ADP back up and go to the top of the draft? Yeah, so if you look at Breece Hall, I do like Kyren Williams. I didn't at first, but they added so much offensive line help that I think he's a value. I do like Jonathan Taylor. But Devon Achane and Barkley are, I mean, I could put caution on either one of those guys. I didn't. But that has as much to do with that kind of overall lack of blue in that area that I pointed out earlier. But the Breece Hall blue was more my way of saying, don't let this guy, I'm not going to take him ahead of Justin Jefferson. I'm not going to take him ahead of Bijan or Jamar Chase. But I think that, you know, some people are taking him, Amon-Ra ahead of him. Some people are taking Puka ahead of him. Don't do that. You know, there's more good wide receivers in rounds 2 through 6 than running back. So you'll find a bunch of cautions in the round 2 to 6 running backs, Pacheco, Rashad White, and you'll find a good bit of blues there. So the blue for Breece was just more saying, hey, ETN is a yellow. Rashad White's a yellow. Pacheco's a yellow. I just like starting with one of those top three running backs and building hero running back teams.
So that's interesting. So that's a lot about then team construction of saying that if I'm going to be drafting around where Breece Hall is going, then based on what will be available to me later in the draft, I'm going to be excited to leave this area with either, you know, with Bijan Robinson or with Breece Hall and kind of building out from that way. That's a very interesting way of kind of looking at that.
The article could never be big enough for me to put all that kind of information in.
Sure.
So by making him blue and giving him that little bit of a boomp, that was my way of doing it. And again, so don't assume that you know exactly what these colors mean. If you don't know why a guy is a certain color, feel free to ask me on Twitter. And if you want $5 off on the draft kit, you can use the code BestBallNFL for $5 off the draft kit. That got I got that dropped on me by Jack Rankin like right before our pod tonight.
Oh.
And I thought I would throw that out there. So, but yeah.
You're breaking news to me. I didn't know that one. So there you go.
I went to him today and asked for it. Oh, no, I did so ask for it in the draft room, and he came in and threw it.
No, I saw it.
Don't assume you under, you know, I'm giving you in the articles the more popular reasons why people are certain colors and how to handle them. But if you don't know why a guy is a certain color, always feel free to hit me on Twitter and I'll give you more texture behind it.
That's Todd just hit on. These are all going to be part of the draft kit. Hit us with that promo code again. What was the promo code you got?
BestBallNFL. And I will be using
Twitter handle.
I run to Daylight Podcasts going forward. I want you guys to get these. Everyone knows just how smart Rich Rebar is. Lord Reeves is the goat of goats with this stuff. I love having him on my shows because he always makes me think. And so get the kit, save yourself $5, get my confidence rankings, make Ray's life easier. The more of these kits we sell, the happier Ray will be. And I would appreciate it as well. Thank you.
So actually, I think you'd make my therapist's life easier. I think that's how that works. Remember the draft kit, the Sharp Football Draft Kit over at sharpfootballanalysis.com. Go and check that out. If you're watching us live, there's actually a QR code on the screen. You can find links in the description. Make sure you check that out. We also have a ton of draft stuff coming out. Rich and I have actually started our Team Need series. Those are going to be posting every single weekday up now, up until the draft. So check those out. We're going to have, Rich is going to be talking about Dynasty Rookies with a lot of very interesting guests over the next few weeks. I'll be talking with Ryan McChrystal about his big board for the draft, which is also coming out this week. We have a ton coming up on the website, on the podcast feed. Make sure you subscribe, bookmark, and check it out. And we'll be back to talk with you real soon.